This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
A year after the Olympics is a good time to take a look at how things have changed for some of the people most impacted by the Games. Jacqueline Canelli was in Vancouver last week talking with homeless and street-involved youth about their lives 12 months after the Olympics came to town. Canelli is an assistant professor in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at Carleton University in Ottawa. She started her research on youth and the Olympics a year before the Games came to Vancouver. While she was here, she spoke about her findings with Manuel Schulte. He began by asking her why she decided to focus on youth specifically.
A couple of reasons. One interesting thing that happens within the Olympics is that it's marketed as being for and about young people. The athletes are young. A lot of the information that's up on websites is geared towards youth. There's always an educational component that will be part of the organizing committee's website. The International Olympic Committee has started a new Youth Olympics that's going to be happening every 4 years. The first one's in Singapore. So there's a big focus on youth in the Olympics. At the same time, there's been a lot of research coming out about the fact that the Olympics are really bad for cities, or they can be really bad for cities, particularly for marginalized communities in cities. And so putting these two pieces together, I thought, well, what do we know about the impact of the Games on marginalized youth, on low-income youth, particularly youth who are living on the streets or who are otherwise disenfranchised and living in shelters, etc. So those are the pieces that came together in terms of focusing on youth in relation to the Olympics.
And in your first round of interviews before the Games, a year before the Games, mm-hmm. what did you hear from the people, the young people that you interviewed?
Mm-hmm. Well, before the Games, so the first set of interviews and focus groups, and I also did an arts-based project where I had some of the youth going around with cameras, disposable cameras, and taking photos of the city. And that was the year between about February and April before the Vancouver 2010 Olympics. What was happening then, already the youth were feeling as if there was a lot of pressure on them to get off of the downtown streets. So they talked about if they were panhandling on Granville or Robson Street, the main tourist areas, that they would be approached by the police and asked to leave. But if they, you know, did the same or were out on downtown East Side streets and might not be panhandling, but might be there doing other things, they wouldn't be harassed. The effect being that the youth felt as if they were being pushed out of the downtown core and into the downtown East Side, which was hard for a lot of them. A lot of the services for youth are in the downtown core or they're in the west side of the city. So they're being pushed away from the services and they're being pushed into an area that a lot of them were actually trying to get away from because they're trying to get out of the drug-entrenched cultures that were there, trying to get away from street-level sex work or whatever it might be. So, effectively, the year before the Games, they were definitely feeling as if they were being pushed out of the visible tourist areas and into a more dangerous part of the city.
And then during the Games?
During the Games, there seemed to be less of that. There seems to be a general consensus amongst the youth who I talked to during the Games and also now a year later after the Games that not that they didn't have interactions with the police, but generally they felt as if the police were less heavy-handed. Now, there are a couple of things that go into this. First of all, there's a great deal of civil society attention on the police. There is also the phenomena of global media being, focused on the police. And I think it wouldn't have looked good on the city or on the organizing committee if there'd been a big crackdown on homeless people during the Olympics. Now, in the time leading up to the Olympics, there seems to be a general consensus amongst both the youth and the youth workers that there was a certain amount of effort put into trying to clear the streets, and that happened both through trying to secure them with housing or shelters, which is great, is not a bad thing, but also with intensifying the kind of sweep actions that would happen, where someone, if they had a warrant for their arrest out, suddenly the police would be approaching them just before the games. They'd be put away just before the games and let out just after the games. And there are lots of stories that came out about that, where so during the games, they might not have had as much police interaction as they did in the time leading up to the games, but there certainly seems to have been an effort to get them out of sight in different ways.
And do you have any specific examples of that happening?
Yeah, you know, there are lots of different stories that came out, and every young person, of course, has a different experience. But one of the things that would happen is if young people, now a lot of these young people, not all of them, but a lot of them are Aboriginal, and also a lot of them can be kind of visibly marked as belonging to the street youth culture because they have tattoos or they have the kind of punk haircut or the ripped clothing or whatever. They're walking with dogs or carts, etc. And what they found is if they're in particular neighborhoods where they weren't expected to be, for example, in the West End, they're more likely to be approached by police, not harassed by police, not necessarily under threat of arrest, but just asked, you know, are you sure this is where you ought to be? So there's that kind of subtle pressure that happened as well, where, you know, and one young woman who we'll call Justine, I use pseudonyms for all the youth, but she was out walking, young Aboriginal woman, she was out walking with her boyfriend, who's also Aboriginal, and they were walking to their apartment that they'd actually secured an apartment in the West End of the city. It was a low-income social housing. It was a fantastic opportunity for them. And they're out walking, enjoying the games, you know, taking part of the festivities, and they were approached by the police, and they weren't doing anything. They were just walking down the street and asked if, you know, if they were supposed to be there, if they ought to be in another area. So that kind of pressure that the youth have to navigate was certainly can be attributed to, I think it's the kind of thing they actually face at all times in Vancouver, but in probably arguably intensified during the games.
Mm-hmm. And now that the games are over, you're back here doing more interviews. Mm-hmm. And what are you finding out now?
So this is the kind of 1 year later follow-up. And I was interested in, I've been asking the youth about both to reflect back on what their experiences were like during the games and to think about what's happened in the city. Now, a few things that seem to have come up. One is that, you know, there was a big one of the kind of claims that was made by VanOck, the organizing committee, and by the games bid coordinators when they're trying to bring the games to Vancouver. And this is the kind of claim that's made by any coordinating committee that's trying to get the Olympic Games into their city, is that it will benefit people by providing employment, right? Like, that's one of the big pushes. And so I was interested in, had that happened for the youth, and I asked them, and some of them did get jobs, especially the men got jobs out of construction or security, but they were quite low paying jobs that were time limited. You know, they lasted during the games. And then what the youth are reporting is that after the games, those opportunities completely dried up. And in fact, there seemed to be less opportunities than there had been before the games. So they had sort of a short period of, for some of them, employment, but then after the games, it seems harder than before. They also report that it seems to be, I'm not entirely sure yet whether what the effects have been in terms of housing, but there definitely seems to be a consensus that the increased police presence during the games had an effect in terms of normalizing the idea of police on the streets, and so that continued after the games, and also the presence of security cameras and the fact that the security cameras weren't taken down. You know, they're just noticing the ways in which the city has shifted.
And social services?
And that's been something else I've been asking the youth about. It's hard. I mean, the youth themselves, you know, they're living their lives day by day, and they can't. It's not possible for them to have a bigger picture impression. So I'd say in general, they've said it hasn't been harder to access social services than before, but it's always hard. It's, you know, it's not any harder, but it's really hard, right? It's always been really hard, and it's gotten worse, I would say, over the last, 10, 20 years in terms of policies around welfare retrenchment and cuts to services. There are some programs, there are cutbacks that are happening that, again, can we attribute to the games? Well, hard to say. There's a huge debt, and there are also cutbacks. Well, you know, arguably the two are related, but no one is saying that they are. So I think there is an effect on the young people, but I can't really definitively say in one way, one direction or another right now.
And you're also looking into the London Games in 2012, the Summer Games there.
Mm-hmm.
And you went there and did similar research. What are you finding from your research there?
Yeah, the London Games. So I went last summer to just start setting up, making connections with people with youth services and youth shelters there. And we did sort of a test run of a focus group there. So it was just one focus group with 10 young people living in East London. And what was interesting, so this is now, last summer is 2 years before the Games. And what the youth said at the time is that they had noticed an increased police presence on the streets already. This is in East London. That they attributed to the coming games, and they definitely felt, now these are all because of the history of, you know, who is impoverished in London, the UK, and the kind of racialized aspects of that. These are all young black youth. Almost all of them were men, Afro-Caribbean background, and so they are already feeling under pressure and under scrutiny by the police in London, and they definitely feel as if it has been ramped up since the Olympics were announced. Now I'll be going back again this coming summer, and we'll be doing more extensive interviews and focus groups, and we'll see if that holds true. But it makes sense. I mean, there's already been reports coming out, just as has happened in Vancouver, about all the money that's being poured into security and the increased police force. I don't think anyone should be surprised that those who are already targeted by the police are receiving more attention in the lead up to the games in either city, because it's common, it's on the public record that more money is being poured into policing because security is becoming more and more important for Olympic Games. So to me, that's not at all surprising, and that when we look at the young people who are already most marginalized in the communities, that their experience has been that they're interacting more with the police in more negative ways in the lead up to the games.
What are you hoping in the long term will come out of your study?
Well, on the one hand, in my kind of research academic aims are to try and document and make sense of this phenomenon that's called the Olympic Games, and to understand how it's impacting cities in a way that a lot of studies that currently exist about the Olympics are focused more on, you know, the sporting element of it, or there might be about the audience response to the games. But there hasn't been a whole lot done yet, although this is starting to change, on what it means for the inhabitants of the city, the people who aren't attending the events themselves, the people who aren't the athletes, but the people who have to bear the brunt of the infrastructure changes, the construction, the debt that's incurred, the increased policing. So one aim is to document, to make sense of those stories from the perspective of a group of people who don't usually get their opinion and their voices aired. And then certainly another goal is to, in documenting those stories and in finding that, in fact, the games are really difficult and arguably make life harder for people whose lives are already living on the edges, that hoping that academic studies like this will provide some leverage for those organizations and groups who are trying to resist the incursion of the Olympics. There are lots of people, there are Rights to the City movements and other kinds of organizations, you know, that say no to the games, that this will help them leverage more support, because the more studies that we have that document that, you know, the games are not good for everyone, and we need to think harder and more longer term about what it means to host games like this, the better.
Jacqueline Canelli was speaking with Manuel Schulte earlier this week. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at Carleton University in Ottawa. If you'd like to read an article she wrote about her research on the Dominion newspaper online, you can find a link from our website, coopradio.org/redeye.